The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald, Garen Perrow columnist for Stockhead. Welcome to another edition of the Explorers Podcast. Today we're catching up with William Johnson. William is Managing Director of the iron ore and battery materials focused Strike Resources. The wonderfully named Strike trades under the code SRK, or Sierra Romeo Kilo to be sure. It last traded at 10 cents for a market cap of about 20 million. As mentioned, Strike has a twin focus on iron ore and battery materials. Its iron ore exposure is in WA's Pilbara, with a longer dated option in Peru. Strike's positioning on battery metals is courtesy of lithium in Argentina and graphite in Queensland. You may have noticed that Strike's share price has been edging up of late. The move is due to the recent release of a feasibility study into a development of the Paulsens East project in the Pilbara. It is a project capable of throwing off a lot of cash relative to Strike's modest market cap. As we all know, China's V-shaped economic recovery has kept iron ore prices at elevated levels. Today, iron ore is, $125 a tonne, making for Australian dollars, $171 a tonne. Fantastic prices. Now, while some predict iron ore will weaken in the months ahead, others like Elizabeth Gaines at Fortescue reckon the price should stay nice and strong through 2021. As it is, Strike's feasibility study covers the potential for some price weakness, but Paulsens East would still come out with a robust cash flow generation capability if that were to, in fact, come to pass. Now, I'll get William to run through all that in a moment. First, I'm going to welcome him to the podcast. Hi, William, and thanks for your time today.
Hi, Barry. It's nice to be here again.
Great. Now, William, always nice to start out with a bit of a professional background on yourself.
Yes, look, thanks, Barry. Look, I'm, as you can probably tell from my accent, English. Studied engineering at Oxford University in England, and then I sort of worked in the resource exploration industry for a couple of years overseas, ended up in Australia, and I've been involved with Strike pretty much since the beginning, early 2003, 2004, when Strike was listed as a resource exploration company. And for pretty much all that time, since the early 2000s until now, we've had a very strong focus on the iron ore industry, primarily through our large-scale project in Peru, which perhaps we can talk about a bit later, but more recently with our Paulsens project here in Pilbara, which, as you correctly mentioned in the introduction, we're focusing on now to get into production as quickly as we can to take advantage of the current strong iron ore prices.
Right. Okay. I don't think we've ever had an Oxford graduate on the podcast, so we're going uptown today, that's for sure. Now, before looking at Paulsens East and the feasibility study, tell us about the overarching strategy of the company, in particular the dual focus of iron ore and battery materials. It's a bit different, so it'd be interesting to hear your explanation.
Yes, it is. And look, I mean, we were, I guess, focused on iron ore before and during the last iron ore boom, around about 2008, 2009. And as I said, our focus then was in South America with our very large magnetite, high-grade magnetite projects over there. After, I guess, when the sort of the last boom started to fade away, we looked around for alternative, I guess, projects to, if you like, spread the risk. And we noticed that the battery minerals sector was picking up. And so we felt, as a sort of a diversification, we'd see if we could find some good large-scale battery minerals projects. And knowing South America pretty well, as we did, and knowing that Argentina was renowned for large-scale, very low-cost lithium brine projects, we sort of focused there and picked up our Solaroz lithium project a couple of years ago. And that project is sitting on our books. We're just waiting for the environmental impact assessment to be approved so we can start exploration. And look, that's a very exciting sort of long-term project in that it has a very good address. It sits right next door to Orocopra's project on the same lithium brine lake, and we have a very large land holding there. So we have the potential to potentially develop a project of similar size and scale to Orocopra's, which you know, your listeners may know has a market value today of sort of close to $1 billion. So that's sort of, I guess, where the dual focus of the company came from. And now the, I guess, iron ore market has picked up again over the last year. That's sort of where our current focus is. And particularly now, given that COVID over the last year has restricted our ability to travel to and work in South America. You know, we've been in a fortunate position of having a really great asset here in the Pilbara, WA, so it's easy for us to travel to. You know, it's poised to get into production relatively quickly so we can take advantage of these great iron ore prices.
Nick, it would be a fair assessment at this point. I mentioned the market cap of about 20 mil. That was probably justifiable on the lithium in Argentina alone, let alone what's to come, the base case at Paulsens East.
Look, it's a good question. I mean, you're right. I mean, as probably most CEOs of junior resource companies tell you, they do feel the market undervalues all their assets. And I think that's particularly true with us. Yes, the lithium project has a lot of intrinsic value, as I've just mentioned. Our large-scale assets in Peru, in particular the Apurimac iron ore project we have over there, I mean, back in 2008, that basically drove the share price of the company up to close to $3. And, you know, had a $300 million market cap based mainly around that particular project. Now, at that time, we only had a 60% share of that project. Since then, we've managed to buy out our partners, so we have 100% of the project. And yet, at the moment, the market's putting almost zero value on that. Now, it does have a higher capital cost to get into production, but it is definitely a very solid long-term asset that we have on our books. And I'm very, very confident that we'll see some of that value reflected in the company's share price in the near to medium term as the iron ore market continues to be strong.
Yeah.
And then you're right. And in terms of Paulsens East, look, I guess that's been a hidden jewel in the company's portfolio. We picked it up about the same time as we did the South American assets in Peru, and we started work on it back in 2006. We did a drilling campaign in 2006, and then again in 2008, with the aim of sort of defining the resource and bringing it into production. Then, however, the Peruvian asset, I guess, because it was so much bigger, became our focus, and we essentially parked the asset in the Pilbara whilst we were focusing on that. So I guess it's sort of, like I said, it's been a bit of a hidden gem within the company, but now that we've advanced the project considerably with getting native title approval, completing our feasibility study, and moving towards production in the first half of next year, I think you'll find that investors recognize the value of this project, and that will be reflected in our share price over the next couple of months.
Okay. So let's have a look at Paulsens East. If you could describe the project for us and just run through some of the feasibility numbers.
So the Paulsens East project comprises a 3 kilometer long ridge of outcropping iron ore that in places outcrops up to 60 meters above the surrounding land area. We've defined a JORC resource of over 9 million tonnes at 61% FE. And within that, there's a probable reserve also of about 6 million tonnes, which basically underpins the production that we've focused our feasibility study on. And what we're looking to do is mine this deposit and produce approximately 1.5 million tonnes a year of high-grade direct shipping ore over 4 years, initial mine life of 4 years, to produce in total about 6 million tonnes. Now, because of the nature of the iron ore, what's really interesting is that when the iron ore is crushed, most of it is crushed to a lump product, which typically attracts a significant premium on the iron ore market. So we're going to be producing around 75% lump and 25% fines. And so the material, the lump material that we're going to produce, be producing, and we're expecting to be able to deliver a grade of at least 62% Fe. So we should be able to receive a significant premium on the current benchmark price. Now, at the moment, as you said at the beginning of the interview, I think the iron ore price is around about $125 US a ton at the moment, and that's the benchmark price for fines. So we would expect to be receiving a significant premium to that because we'll be delivering lump into the market rather than fines, or most of our product will be lump. So that's the, I guess, the production schedule that we're aiming for. The mine itself will be conventional drill and blast, open pit mining, and because it's direct shipping ore, once the ore is mined, we'll simply be crushing and dry screening it and then loading it onto trucks and hauling it to the Utah Point facility at Port Hedland. And one of the great advantages of this project is that we have the ability to export out of Port Hedland. There's sufficient capacity out there at the moment to accommodate our needs. And there's all the infrastructure there already established for stockpiling and loading iron ore into ships. So we don't have to make any investment in facilities at the port. It's already there. So from our perspective, the logistics chain is pretty simple. Load the ore onto trucks, truck it to the port, dump it there, and then everything there is handled by the operators at the port. So it's a nice, relatively simple logistics chain. In terms of the key economic numbers that came out of the feasibility study, we're looking at a capital cost of just under $16 million to get this project into production. And we've modelled an average oil price of $100 per tonne, essentially declining from current levels over the life of mine down to approximately $85 per tonne 4 years from now. And based upon that assumption, we forecast generating about $167 million of pre-tax net cash flow for the company, with a net present value of I think about $140 million. Mm. So the economics look really good. And if the iron ore prices stay where they are today, in $115, $120 per ton for the life of mine, then you know we can potentially generate over $200 million in net of free cash flow for the company from this project. So, you know, for a capital cost of, you know, less than $20 million, generating those sorts of returns are really, really attractive.
Mm. Particularly for a company with a $20 million market cap currently. Mm. Okay. The low CapEx, $16 million, very low indeed, but it has to be arranged or organised. What's the story there?
Look, we need to raise the funding to advance the project. We've got a little under $2 million left in the company, so we do need to raise some more money. Look, we've got a couple of avenues there. For the last year, we've been engaging with a number of potential customers, iron ore traders and offtake partners, and those discussions have been advancing over the last year. And a number of those partners or parties have expressed an interest in not just securing offtake from the project, but also helping us with project finance, prepayments for shipments, and so on. So there's the potential there to get some funding from those parties. Mm. We also have a very supportive broker in the form of Canaccord, who have been supporting us throughout the last year or so. And at some point, we'll be working with them and looking to perhaps raise some further capital, you know, probably over the next year once the, you know, we advance the permitting side of the project.
Mm, okay. Now, some very attractive numbers for the 4-year project. I was just wondering, is there some upside in the ore body or regionally perhaps?
Look, we have identified upside in a number of areas. Firstly, as I mentioned at the beginning, there's a 3-kilometre outcropping ridge of iron ore, which contains, over that 3-kilometre length, that's where we've defined the sort of 9.5 million ton resource. We have done some drilling to the southeast of the outcropping ridge and also done some surface sampling. And the results from that indicate that it's likely that the iron ore does extend further up to 1.5 kilometres within our tenement to the southeast. We haven't fully drilled that out yet, but like I said, the signs do indicate that the ridge sort of dips underground and potentially that could add, you know, a 1.5 kilometre extension to the resource and potentially extend the mine life. Also, more recently, we have identified areas of high-grade surface detrital material, which basically is iron ore that over the sort of millions of years has sort of eroded or fallen off the ridge and tumbled down to the base of the ridge. And that material, there's large areas of this material up to a couple of meters thick, just lying at the base of the ridge. And about a month ago, we undertook a sampling program to define exactly how much of that material there is, and we're just waiting for the results of the test work to come back on that. But potentially, if there, you know, does happen to be a significant amount of that material, that gives us an opportunity to potentially even, you know, start a small project to generate some early cash flow from the project, because this material is essentially almost already crushed in that it presents as small pebbles of iron ore in a very simplistic way. You know, we could just scoop it up, put it in a mobile crushing plant, and in theory, quite quickly, we could have some material that we could deliver to the port and get our first one or two shipments away, for a relatively small investment. But that's we're still waiting for the assay results to come back yet, so watch this space on that. So to answer your question, yes, there's some upside in terms of extending the resource to the southeast, and also from the detrital material. And also not forgetting that, you know, we have defined a resource of over 9 million tonnes. The plan is just to exploit 6 million tonnes over 4 years, because that's what the mine plan has, presented to us as being sort of the optimal given the current sort of iron ore price. But, I mean, if the iron ore price stays high or gets higher, then, you know, we can potentially dig deeper and stay mining for longer.
Yeah, okay. Now, a question I probably wouldn't have asked 12 months ago, but thanks to Rio Tinto, I probably need to ask it. The relationship with the traditional owners, the consents in place?
Look, they are, and it's we've I think developed a good relationship with the traditional owner group, and it was very unfortunate timing in that we were in the middle of negotiations with the PKKP group, which is the traditional owners of the land, and that's the same group. Whose caves at Drunken Gorge were destroyed by Rio Tinto, and that sort of happened during the negotiations we were actually holding with the PKKP. So there was a period there for a couple of weeks where we sort of had to pause and wait for things to sort of settle down, but we managed to get them back to the table, and I think we're very proud of the work that we did to get them to the point where they were happy to sign a native title agreement with us to allow us to mine the ridge. Basically, we were just we make commitments to be very transparent with them, and I think they appreciated that. And that was a very positive step and an important milestone for us.
Okay, that's great to hear. The first production likely roughly when you think?
Yeah, look, it's a good question. So, like I said, we've been sort of progressively ticking all the boxes that we need to do to develop the project. The agreement with the native title with the traditional owners was the first major one. Completion of the feasibility study is now done as well. The next step for us is to basically get all the permits and approvals needed that we require to start work on the project. Now, the main one there is the mining permit from the Department of Mines here in WA. We're just finalising the application for that permit. We're just waiting on one final miscellaneous licence application to be granted before we can advance that. And that sort of really is going to, if you like, define the timetable moving forward. Once we get that application in, we would hope that it can be processed within 6 to 8 weeks, which is sort of the normal time that these applications take to get processed if there's no issues with them. We've done all the environmental surveys we need to do. We don't think there's any sort of significant issues there, so we're not envisaging any delays, but you never know. So, look, if the permitting process proceeds in a timely way and quickly, and we get our permit late this year or early next year, there's a few other permits and approvals that we need, but we'd hope that if we can sort of get all those done sort of in, let's say, January next year, then we could be in a position to start getting on site February, March next year. And then the first production would be a few months after that. I mean, internally, we're sort of aiming to try and get into production in the first half of the year, obviously sort of before the end of June. But that is dependent on getting the permits approved in a timely way.
Mm, okay. Well, let's just bring it all together in a sense of what should investors be looking out for, say, in the next three to six months or so. I guess the permitting process, securing those, and first production, I guess.
Absolutely. Look, I mean, there's I guess the key things from our perspective are permitting and funding, and then obviously the company needs to make its final investment decision. And once that's done, then it's all systems go.
Right. Okay. Alrighty, William. Very interesting story. Obviously, the near-term cash flow in the Pilbara at a time of fantastic iron ore prices, plus the longer-term big-time iron ore potential in Peru and lithium in Argentina. So I hope we've given listeners a good feel for what's ahead of the company, and best of luck with it all, and thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much, Barry. I appreciate the opportunity.